My name is Caitlin Pratt. It is January 29th at 8:59 p.m. We are in the EMU, and I am interviewing
Elizabeth Corneotis.
So what branch did you go into?
The Navy.
When did you join?
In 2012.
Do you remember the exact date?
No, it was 2011. I had 6 months. It was September, I think, 2011. I had 6 months before I shipped out.
What was your motivator for joining?
I didn't know what I was doing with my life. I didn't have any direction.
So why the Navy?
Because I wanted to do the job that I joined to do, which was a CTI.
What does that mean?
Cryptological Technician Interpretive, which is a linguist. They send you to school to learn a different language, and I was really into that.
There was no other reason why you joined the Navy?
No. No, my life wasn't going anywhere. I was getting into trouble a little bit.
Did you try to talk to any other recruiters in the meantime, like an Air Force recruiter or a Marines recruiter?
Well, I talked to a Marine recruiter, and I didn't know who he was. I didn't know who any of the recruiters were, because when you go into the recruiting station, they all try to get you. They're trying to snatch you up. So I went to the Marine recruiter, and he gave me a fake ASVAB, and I told him what I was trying to do, and he told me it wasn't very likely that I would get to do what I wanted to do. But after he gave me the fake ASVAB, he contacted the Navy recruiter who was out of the office, and he was like the Marine recruiter owed the Marine recruiter a beer for finding me, because I did really good on the test. I got like a really high score. They weren't expecting it. I was in like North Carolina in the country, so not to say that that means like, you know, you're stupid if you're from there, but they didn't have as high scores as, you know, other counties had, so they were like super pumped when they found me.
How did
that make sense?
Yeah. How did your family feel? What was their reaction?
My mom was pissed. I just didn't tell her what I was doing because she kept trying to talk me out of it. So when I did tell her, she looked like she was going to cry, but she didn't really say shit after that.
Did you tell her after you had enlisted or before?
After. I told her beforehand that I was thinking about it, and she kept coming at me with like you're going to die, sort of, essentially. Like, this isn't a good time to be in the military because you're going to die.
What was it like in the military? What did she mean?
I don't know. I don't know what she meant. She's just paranoid. So, it's fine, though. I didn't die, but, she got over it.
What was your dad's reaction?
He was proud. He was just... he was glad because I started living back at his house again, and he knew I was gonna get out, so...
What about your siblings?
I don't know. I guess they were happy that I was doing something. That I picked something and did it.
Did you feel guilty about it after seeing your mom's reaction?
No. It was a little bit, like, not funny, but, like, I just had to, like, roll my eyes at it because it was, like, she doesn't even know what she's talking about.
It almost seems like you joined out of spite of your mom's reaction.
Oh, no. Like, I needed something to do. It's not like she had a better option. It's not like my parents ever were like, oh, we'll pay for college if you want to go to college. Like, I felt like I had no options, and even still, she was against it. Like, it was either that or just continuing to work in food service. Like, what was I to do, you know? Like, so no, definitely not out of spite. I mean, that wouldn't have been good if I did that out of spite. It's a really huge commitment.
What was your score on the practice ASVAB?
I don't know. That
they just said you did really good?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the practice ASVAB. It wasn't that many questions. I don't know what the scoring system is.
When you took the real ASVAB, what was your score?
90.
Is that considered good?
Yeah, it's considered pretty good.
Did you take it by yourself or with other recruits?
I was with two other recruits that we went from the town I was in to Charlotte, North Carolina, to take the ASVAB.
Did you go with the recruiter, or did you...
Yeah, the recruiter drove us.
Okay.
In their government vehicle.
Was there a big difference between your score and their score?
Yeah, there was. I feel like they got like 60s around there. So, you know, I look pretty cool coming out of there. But I didn't expect to get a 90 based on how the test felt. It felt harder than that.
What did you struggle with on the ASVAB?
To be honest, I barely remember. It was a while ago. I just know it was like math and technical questions that I wasn't very familiar with, but I feel like overall it's common sense. But a little bit of, you know, applying formulas. But just mostly a lot of common sense.
When you finally signed the enlistment papers, what was your general feeling or your general reaction? Were you happy? Were you excited? Were you nervous?
Yeah, no, I was excited because I went to MEPS and
what's MEPS?
MEPS, Military Entrance Processing Station. Yeah, sounds right. So I went in there, and everyone was very doubtful that I was going to get the job that I wanted because, I don't know, I think they didn't think I would, like, they don't think that people are smart enough to get that job because you have to take the ASVAB, but you also have to take the D-Lab.
What's the D-Lab?
That's the Defense Language Aptitude Battery Exam. So I didn't take that until the day that I signed up. So me taking that test, like, everything depended on me taking that test and passing it. You have to get 100 on that test. So I got 102.
What is it test on?
Your aptitude for learning languages.
What kind of questions does it have?
Well, you know, that's classified. But it was a lot like fake languages, but similar to English. It was just applying different grammatical structures to fake English words. Like, there are non-words, pretty much, but there were words that you knew. It's kind of confusing. They just added, like, endings. Like, you know, like Latin has, like, endings? Like
suffixes.
Yeah, like the way that English doesn't necessarily have. They just applied that concept to English, and you were supposed to kind of figure it out. So it was a multiple choice, though. So, you know, I got through it. That hurt my brain more than anything. Like, the ASVAB didn't make me feel that way. I thought the ASVAB was hard, but then I took the D-Lab.
Did you get your score instant? Or
yeah.
Is it...
Well, I didn't get my score, but the proctor was like, you did a good job. And I was like, yes, I did a good job. So, so then I had to, like, you know, go and finish processing, like, go to medical and do all that. They take your fingerprints. They pretty much do. They get you, and then they decide they're going to have you, and then they let you choose your job, or, like, potentially choose your job.
So to clarify, you have to pass MEPS before you can choose your job.
Yeah.
What do they do at MEPS? You said they take your fingerprint, and then what else? Do they actually do, like, a medical test, or?
Yeah. They bring you into a room, and they put you in a gown, like a medical, like, gown. And you're kind of just sitting there waiting there, and there's, like, you're in a room with a bunch of girls, and they're all not wearing any clothes, like, in their gowns. And they just take you one by one and bring you into the doctor's office, and they, like, look at your body pretty much. Like, they, like, make you lay there, like, spread out, check inside, make sure. They said they were making sure I was a girl, so...
How long between going into the recruiter's office and actually finishing with MEPS and going to, I think it's called basic training, how much time was there in between those two points?
6 months. Yeah. They also make you do the duck walk.
What's the duck walk?
You squat down and grab your ankles, like, from behind, and you have to walk like that. So, like, you know, that's fun.
What's,
like,
the purpose of that?
I think they're just making sure you have a full range of motion and you're not lying, that, you know, nothing's wrong with you. Because it's kind of hard to do, but I think if they're, you know, if you had some sort of affliction, they'd be, like, they could tell that you were in pain or if something wasn't working. So, I don't know.
How did you prepare for basic training?
I just worried a lot about it. you know, I tried to, like, you know, up my cardio a little bit, but to be honest, I didn't do a whole lot. I couldn't do a push-up. but, you know, just went into it and it turned out to be okay.
So you were intimidated by it and you did a little bit of preparation going into it. Did you feel like you were on par with other people, or did you feel like you were behind?
So I thought I was going to be behind, but then when I got there, I realized the physical state of everybody else was despicable. So now after you know, the first couple weeks, I realized I wasn't intimidated anymore. But, you know, initially I thought that, you know, it was going to be so physically intensive and that I was going to be behind. You know, they start you off really basic, and it doesn't matter what you can or cannot do. It's a very slow process for everybody, so they have to go by the pace of the slowest, like, you know, fattest person. I don't know.
Can you describe the basic training for me from beginning to end?
Yeah. So, like, when you get there?
Yeah.
When you get there, you get off a bus, and they start yelling at you once you get off the bus, and it kind of sucks. They're really mean. So, like, the moment you get there, they make you pee in a cup. But, you know, I wasn't, like, not everyone's prepared, so they just have you, like, walk in a circle around this big room, and you get to pee when you're ready. And then there's a room with, like, 5 toilets in a line. And so you just, like, join your friend on the toilet next to them, and you pee in a cup, and you give it to the person. And then you have to sit down and wait for everyone to be finished. So there's a couple hours of your life just sitting there. And then you can hear all the people that work there, like the staff, I guess. And they're all talking about stuff, and you start to get really nervous because they're being really mean.
What do you mean by mean?
Just making you feel worthless. But I mean, you pretty much are.
How so?
So you don't know anything. You don't know how to do anything. You have to, you know, you have to be, like, kind of, like, broken down and built up, I guess.
So you think that's a part of the mental intimidation factor of basic training, where they break you down and build you back up to be, you know, soldiers?
Some people really have to get broken down. And other people, you know, you just kind of fall in line. Some people, have to realize that they have to get broken. Like, they don't realize that they have to get broken, but I don't know.
So after the drug testing, what happens?
You go and you get your C bag. And they give you not all your uniforms, but some of them. They give you your underwear. They immediately make you change your underwear. Which is weird. They give you, like, your underwear and your sweats, which is, like, your PT uniform. So then you go and change into that. And, so you get a few things. You get, like, your stenciling kit and your underwear.
What's a stenciling kit?
It's, like, a stamp thing that you have to write your name in. And then so you can make a stamp with your name to, like, you know, stamp all your clothes, your underwear, your bras. Get Sharpies too, because sometimes you can't stencil your clothes and you have to write in Sharpie on the tag. That's, like, the most important thing about day one, is making sure all your clothes have your name in it. Stupid, but and you learn how to fold stuff. But
what do you mean you learn how to fold stuff? Is it different than how somebody would ordinarily fold stuff at home?
Yeah, they have specific ways to fold everything, but I guess you get there and then you do all that stuff, and eventually your RDC, your recruit division commander, comes and gets you from that, like, processing building, and then they bring you to your compartment, which is a temporary compartment where you're going to sleep for a little bit, because you have to get through something called P days. It's processing days. So you go to, like, medical and do a lot of shit like that. But that first day, you're there. I mean, I got there at night, and we kept doing stuff all night. And then when the morning hit, I thought, like, we finally got to the place that we were going to go, like, that's where we slept. So I thought maybe we got to go to sleep, but we didn't. And they just made us brush our teeth because they said we stink. And they made us put our stuff away. Like, they gave us shower stuff, like, stuff to wash ourselves and, you know, hygiene. So they made us put it away, and then we had to stand there And we didn't get to sleep, but we finally got to eat. But that was terrifying, so.
How was it terrifying?
I don't know, it's just different, and people were yelling at us about, like, making sure we are in the right line, and what we're, like, no speaking, and, but, I don't know, it was just, like, an uninviting eating environment, I feel like, but then, like, we're supposed to eat, and it's just, like, nervous for me.
How would you describe the relationship between instructors and trainees?
No relationship, like, they just yell at you, and they are mad at you all the time, no matter what. Even if you did everything that they ask, they're mad.
So they were rude to you?
Oh yeah, they were rude. They were scary a lot.
What would you, can you name an example of when they were scary?
Yeah, like, okay, I wrote, they were teaching us recruit handwriting, which is everything in all caps. And they told us to write specific things down. They told us to write our name down. And then I was the only one that wrote my first name as well as my last name down. And then my RDC said, when I handed him the paper to make sure I did it right, he was like, I don't give a fuck what your first name is. Don't ever write your first name down. And we also weren't allowed to address them by name. So, like, I didn't make this mistake, but the first person to, like, try to specify, because, like, who they were speaking to, I was like, oh, you know, like, Petty Officer Birch. And he was like, don't you ever fucking call me by my name. So that was weird. It was just weird things. Like, you just have to get to know what they are going to get really mad about. And then it's okay. Just don't ever do any of those things. But they're still going to be mad no matter what.
So it sounds like your goal was to stay under the radar. Do you feel like other people caught on to the same rule? Or do you feel like that you were an exception?
No, other people were fucking up left and right. Like, they didn't understand. They just were, like, caught up in it, and they just couldn't do it. Like, we had this one day where they said we weren't drinking enough water, and you're supposed to drink 12 canteens of water, which is unrealistic. And, like, I understand that. You can't drink that much water. You're going to be sick. So they said that we all had to chug our canteens right now. If our canteens weren't full, we had to go fill them up and chug them right now in front of them. And then when we're done, we have to hold them out over, like, extend our arm and hold it upside down. So mostly everybody finished, you know, because it's not that hard to drink fucking water, but a couple people just couldn't drink their water. So our arms were just out in the air for as long as it took them to finish their fucking cup of water. And then these bitches started puking in the trash can. And I don't believe that they really needed to puke. I feel like they were just being dramatic. I know, like, it's kind of hard to make yourself puke, but it was just a pain in the ass. And I don't know, there's things like that. Other people just weren't assimilating. It's just, you just had to assimilate and it would be okay.
Was there any camaraderie or unit cohesion in basic training? Did you make any friends? Was there a morale boosting?
Yeah, I was friends with everybody. But a lot of the girls were, it's like the girls, you were separated a lot, but, and during the day you were with the dudes, but a lot of separation happened. But the girls were bitches, like, I'll just say that. A lot of fighting, but at the end of the day, someone would always, like, you know, stand up and be like, come on, girls, we gotta get together, we gotta get along, and it was a bunch of fucking bullshit, but, you know, someone was always just trying to, like, they would get some position appointed to them by our RDCs. Like one person would be, like, in charge of administrative stuff, and one person would be in charge of cleaning the bathroom, like, have a team underneath them. One person would be in charge of doing the laundry. So, like, these people with positions, it's like they never had any experience managing people whatsoever, and they would just be, like, little tyrants. And I wasn't playing, like, I'm not playing with them. Like, do not fucking yell at me, you little shit. Like, sort of, like, that's how I felt towards them. So, I didn't really like that. But, aside from that, yeah, like, I was on the head crew, which is, the head is the bathroom. So, you have to clean the bathrooms. Like, those are my bitches. But, you know, just other people, yeah. Like, we tried to help each other out a lot. And then certain people just tried to tell on everybody, which is, like, that's the person you stay away from because they suck.
Tell on everybody for what?
Anything whatsoever. Like, one time, my towel on, you hang your towel up on your bed. It was, like, I think slightly out of place. And then our fake master at arms, which is, like the real position is military police, but they give one person that fake position in boot camp. So she tells me to fix my towel, and I don't immediately get up to do it, and she told on me for being, you know, in, what's the word? Not obedient. Just, you know, a bunch of fucking bullshit. So obviously, I never got in trouble for that, because she was a little psycho. And she failed out. And then she got asmode, which I don't know what it stands for, but it means you go back in training. And one day, she was asmode for so long.
Asmode? What does it stand for?
I don't know what it stands for. Okay. You have to go back further in training. And she was in, like, some hold division, so she wasn't progressing. So she escaped and went to the store and bought candy. And then got caught. So, like, our RDCs told us about that before we were about to leave. But so it's like, you know, people like that were the people initially in charge. But I feel like, like I said, it's a game. So they put someone shitty in charge of people just to see what happens.
So the way you describe it is like it's a huge manipulative system designed to break you down and kind of test your limits.
Yeah.
Do you feel like a lot of people broke, or do you feel like a lot of people had to be held back because of it?
Yeah, my division we started out with 80, and I think we had 20 people get kicked out for various reasons. So we had a particularly rough time, and we had a particularly thin division. But
why were they kicked out?
One dude was washing his underwear in the sink for whatever reason. One dude saw an attractive female RDC and decided to whistle at her. One dude was sleeping in his bunk in the middle of the day for no fucking reason. This one girl, she did a lot, but she took a pillow off an empty rack, and she stuffed it inside her pillowcase. So that, like, that's not cool. Like, you get, like, inspected for stuff like that, so... Like, you can't be doing stuff like that. But that was funny. I called her hoarder for the rest of the time. She got kicked out, though. Some people got injured, though. But they weren't, like, very serious injuries. They just milked them a lot. Like, they'd be like, oh, my ankle's sore every day. And they're like, I can't run, my ankle's sore. It's just because they didn't want to run. Like, I don't want to fucking run either, but... Shit, like, I'm not going back. I'm not going home like this. Like, if I was injured, I would have hit it, because they don't really have much sympathy. They'll just hold you back and kick you out. So, a lot of people had those issues. Their ankles fucking hurt. I saw this one girl, we got to the very end, and it was our last PT test, which means it was, like, the last week. We had not shit left to do, and I saw her in front of me jump on the ground while we were running our last fitness exam. And then she was like, ow, my ankle. I did not stop for her. I needed to make time. She was faking it. I fucking know she was faking it. I saw her jump and... Sorry. Anyways, she was full of shit. What else? I don't know. There was just, like, just disciplinary issues. Like, you just had to be careful about what you did. You know.
Were instructors verbally abusive, or were they especially rude? Yeah. Can you think of any odd punishments or examples of when an instructor was especially harsh?
I don't know. I didn't ever got in trouble, like, individually. I was only ever in a group trouble, like, got in trouble with the group. I mean, some people got in trouble individually, and they had to, you know... do, like, push-ups in front of everybody or something. But they usually dealt with it, administratively as much as they could without trying to hurt someone. you know, unless they had to. But
did you experience any kind of culture shock in basic training when you were surrounded by strangers or having to shower with strangers or having to interact with people on a day-to-day basis that may have been more harsh than, you know, would be in the everyday civilian world?
Like, showering with 80 people is not fun, but it's just, that's how you have to survive. You just have to assimilate. It's like, I think I understood that, but a lot of other people didn't. But,
what,
I don't know.
What was technical school for you like?
So after basic?
Yeah.
Well, first I went to Monterey, California. It was really nice. They were really nice to us there.
What was in Monterey, California?
The Defense Language Institute. I don't know. It was just a huge change. Like, that was the culture shock coming out of boot camp, because I got so used to it. And then we got there, and then people were being nice to us, and I was like, why the fuck are they being nice? I didn't really understand, but, I mean, life kind of, like, went back to normal after that. They didn't require a whole lot of us, I'll say that. Like, we didn't have to march anymore. We just had to show up in the morning and then make sure we were, like, the rule was, I think, make sure you are where you need to be when you need to be there and be there 15 minutes early and be in the right uniform, and that's it. It was never, like, stupid stuff, like, oh, don't have your cell phone. Like, that's when I went to Mississippi. After Monterey, I had been in Monterey for so long that when I went to Mississippi, and everyone who was arriving in Mississippi and Meridian for, they had a couple different schools there, but I went to logistics specialist school there. It was like going back to boot camp after almost 2 years of not being in boot camp anymore, and they sucked. They fucking sucked. They, like, you weren't allowed to have your cell phone in your pocket. You had watch every 3 days. They're just rude.
So how long were you in the Defense Language Institute?
18 months plus processing time and hold time. So close to 2 years.
What was that like for you besides it being easier? Did you make any friends or did you find life to be enjoyable?
I had a ton of friends. We'd be at class every day, 5 days, 5 days a week. We had the weekends off. We had, like, duty sections, but that was every 6 days, I think. So that wasn't too bad to just have duty every 6 days. And you don't really have to do anything unless you had watch, which is sitting in an office. So it's not a big deal. But the school was hard. I was in Arabic class, so that fucking sucked, and it was really hard. And I worked really hard, and it didn't really pay off.
What do you mean it didn't pay off?
So at the end of DLI, you have to take the DLPT, the Defense Language Proficiency Test, and to progress any further in your job, you have to get a 2-2, yeah, 2-2, which it's on like a scale of like 1 to 4 or something, or 0 to 4, so it's like 0, 0 plus 1. 1 plus. I got 1 plus 1 plus instead of the 2-2 that I needed. But I never really actually knew how far my 1 pluses were from 2s. And they didn't give me an opportunity to retake the exam, even though they spent almost 2 years training me.
Do they usually give an opportunity to take it again?
Yes, they do. But for me, they said that I was in fiscal year 12 and we were overmanned for fiscal year 12, which I don't even fucking know what that means, but whatever. So they're
overmanned.
So you
feel like you were
ripped off? I feel like the taxpayers were ripped off, because according to the staff at DLI, it takes $250,000 to send any one student through that program. So I wasted $250,000. They wasted $250,000 training me just to send me to another place to train me for something else.
So the second time around, what were you trained for?
Logistics specialist.
What does that mean?
Supply. For, you know, surface, like the ships, for aviation, as well as postal.
What does tech school for that look like?
Huh?
What does tech school for that look like? Or your training?
So you have class Monday through Friday. It's different than DLI. Like, we had small classrooms at DLI. These were, like, we had, like, a big class group. There was, like 30-ish of us in there. And it was really easy, I'll say that. But it was funny because everyone had, a rough time with it, and they needed help studying a lot. But it was super simple stuff. It was, like, customer service. And then, like, it got more in-depth. But just learning the different forms and stuff, like, there's a lot of different forms that you need to know without looking it up, like different forms of procurement, requisition forms, I guess. They just try to teach you in general, like, what you're going to be doing. A lot of them, like, I don't know if they're, like, databases, but there's that, and then I don't know what it's called, but software that interfaces with a, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like an ordering form, pretty much, instead of a form in your hands, but it's on a software. So you have to learn how to use that particular thing, and you have to know not just how to use it, but how to fix it when it's, like, fucking up.
Having been sent to the second tech school, did you regret enlisting since you no longer got to do what you wanted to do in the first place with language acquisition?
Yeah, no, I was pissed. I was so pissed. But, and I was pissed that they were mean to me when I got there, and they treated me like I just got out of boot camp, even though I had more experience than, you know, the other sailors there. But, you know, I didn't have any rank at the time, so I understand. And why treat me special, but, like, I didn't want to be treated special. I just didn't want to be, like, go back to day one, which it felt like I was just getting dragged back to day one, which wasn't nice. I don't like that. But then after going to class, and then my instructor, whatever that dude's name was, he was really cool. I feel bad for not knowing his name. I think it's Ellison Ramirez. I hope, because I feel like it's racist if I, like, pick the wrong Hispanic name. I'm sorry. he was really cool. He spent a lot of one-on-one time, like, talking to me and trying to, like, help me through things. You know, not the schoolwork itself, because he saw how well I was doing with the schoolwork.
With the Arabic?
And, or no, with the logistics? Logistics, yeah. Okay. So, like, I was just, like, cranking that shit out and doing well. So he was like, wow, okay, cool. And, like, so he talked to me more about what I had been doing before. So, like, he made me feel a little bit better. He was just, like, a nice guy.
What was the average ASVAB score for the people that were in logistics?
I have no idea. I don't think there's exactly a required score to be an LS. But, like anything, like, you can, any job in the Navy, I feel like you can go above and beyond, and there's a lot of stuff to learn. And I just took that opportunity just to learn as much as I could. So it turned out to not be that bad, and I felt like I was actually learning something that didn't fuck with my brain and make me have a headache every day, and that I could immediately apply to my job. So the day I got to my job, I felt like I kind of had an understanding of what I needed to do, and it was a little confusing at first, but the more time went on, I realized how much my training could apply to what I was doing, and I had a ton of notes that I could look at, and they still applied. Like, it wasn't, none of it was useless. So, I mean, that was cool. I was still mad, though, about DLI. I was mad that how that worked out and how I just got pushed to the, like, wayside, and I feel like it was a lot because of my personality, and because I'm not extroverted, and I wasn't always sucking up to all the, higher enlisted and the whoever. Like, I really didn't, because I like to think that's not important, an important thing to do. So I didn't, and it felt like that bit me in the ass. And I even had a chief tell me I was given, like, some weird duty where I had to go sit in a chief's office and help her with her shit, and she just made me rip off all her patches on her uniforms. Like, they just make you do weird shit like that sometimes because you're a seaman and they don't give a fuck about you. and she kept asking me questions, and she was like, well, you're pretty introverted. I think, you know, you would be in a lot better place right now if you just were more extroverted. And to me, that felt really fucked up, and I thought a lot about that. And in the end, I was like, being introverted or extroverted has nothing to do with being a good leader or not. And I think I really learned how to be a good leader while being introverted. So, you know, fuck them for thinking that. I don't agree with it.
On that note, how would you describe Navy culture as a whole?
I feel like they try to stick to traditions, and at the same time, they try to separate themselves from their, you know, their stereotypical traditions. But a lot of it is drinking, and I don't know. What was the question?
How would you describe Navy culture as a whole?
Drinking, yeah.
Why drinking? You think that the enlisted men are the ones drinking, or do you think that as a whole people kind of...
Enlisted, probably.
As a hobby, they pick up drinking.
I feel like there's things that aren't, like... They're not trying to push them on you, but I feel like a lot of times, like, they're really into inclusivity. And, you, like... It's not like they say that outward, but, like, you know, like, through trainings and stuff, like, I really feel like they're just trying to make, like, a really good environment for everyone to come and, like, do their best work. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Where were you first stationed?
Well, like, I was in Monterey. That was school. And then Meridian, Mississippi, that was school also. But then, like, when I was actually doing my job, I was in Patuxent River, Maryland.
What year was that?
I got there at the very beginning of 2014.
What was that like?
I fucking hated that base. It was majority a civilian base. I think there was 20,000 civilians there. And, like, some very small number of military, like 2,000 or 3,000.
What do the civilians do?
Not shit. I don't know, they just rode on our hard-working asses, like, they were, like, in contractor positions, you know, rather, I don't know why they didn't use more military there and why they used civilian contractors. Like, the person that did my job made, like, $100,000 a year at, like, my counterpart at a squadron, which I didn't really understand. It kind of pissed me off, so, like, and I was the one, like, running back and forth a lot of times, and they were the ones chilling in their office.
How would you describe your day-to-day tasks in your position there?
A lot of, like, office work, and contacting with the squadrons. There was, I think our base was unique, because it was a test. The squadrons there were doing tests on their aircraft. So there was 9 squadrons, and, yeah, just contacting them, they would contact me, like, they needed stuff, we needed we needed to make sure the planes were able to fly all the time. That was, like, the main goal. There was, like, hundreds of aircraft, and if a plane was down, that was, like, on our bad report. So it was, like, kind of, in a way, I mean, we weren't in charge of the maintenance or anything, but we were in charge of getting the parts to the maintainers to make sure all the planes were flying.
Did you enjoy your job?
You know, I liked that job. It was cool. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about aircrafts. It was, like, kind of useless, but, I mean, I liked it. And just always being around the aircrafts and learning different things. Cool to me, even though I don't really feel like I can apply that. Because it's not, like, technical training that I had. It was just more, like, off-the-hand training of, like, different parts of airplanes and stuff. So it's not like I don't really know anything about putting an airplane together. I kind of know what the parts are, and I kind of know what they're for.
Did you miss home at all?
Not really. I wasn't that far. I was never deployed, so I was in Maryland. I'm from Massachusetts.
At this point, was your mom a little bit more willing to accept your status in the military, or was she still hesitant?
Yeah, she was fine. I mean, she couldn't do shit about it, so I'm an adult, and it's not like I never
like got deployed, I think she'd probably lose her shit if I was, you know, deployed, but whatever.
What did you struggle with the most?
In general?
Yes.
Bullshit. So much bullshit, like meetings. And having to sit there and listen to shit that you shouldn't have to listen to. And listen to, like, if all your work is done, you should be able to get out at a reasonable time. But, you know, they would have these things, like, the highest person in charge of us would be like, oh, like, they can't let us out right now, even though everyone's sitting around, like, none of the squadrons need anything. And we still have to sit here in our offices and pretend like we're working. When we're not, and everybody knows it. Like, stuff like that, and, yeah, having meetings, getting called back, and, like, you know, having little, like, things blamed on you that you had no control over.
So you felt like some of the policies were inefficient?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel like that described other Navy policies, or just in your department or your job task?
It's just, like, that's part of the culture of the Navy is, you know, knowing that there's a better way to do it, but not being allowed.
Can you think of any other examples of inefficiency?
Yeah, like, you know, like, you see this pack of screws, right? So the squadron needs them, you have to keep reordering them, but then one day, you're like, let me look at the price on this screw. And for some reason, the Navy is spending, I don't know, like $300 on a single, like, maybe not a screw, but something comparable in size, something comparable in material, and it's like, how could that ever be? And you look at the unit of issue, and it's not like one package of 300, it's one each. And you're like, there has to be a better price on this. But I think, like, the way it works, like, with contracts, and it's not like a free market sort of thing. It's like companies bid on having their contract with the military. So that's something, though, it's like, I feel like way higher up that you can never do shit about.
On another note, do you feel like there was a gap in treatment between males and females at any point?
No. No, I feel like the best person got what you deserve. If you worked really hard, I can't speak for other people, but I worked really hard and it went noticed, and I know other people, like, say, like, jealous of me, or, like, feeling like I was getting better preferential treatment. Yeah, I guess I feel like people did think I was getting preferential treatment, and all I had to say to them was, like, be as good as me. That's it. And I feel like that's how treatment is.
So you feel like males felt like you were getting preferential treatment because you were female?
No, they just thought I was just, I don't know if they thought it was because I was female, but I know I remember being bitched about a few times.
Do you feel like
it wasn't that big of a deal either? It was just, but I knew it was because I always put everything I did. So that's how you get treated better.
Do you feel like at any point males thought you were getting preferential treatment because you were female, or treated you like you were getting preferential treatment?
No. No, I mean, when you like get down to it, like, I mean, I don't. Like, obviously I am a female, but, like, I don't feel like I necessarily take on the traditional, like, roles as a female, and I'm not, like, super girly, although, like, I just don't feel like my femininity had anything to do with how I was ever treated, because neutrality I try to maintain, and I don't ever talk to men any differently, you know, a male superior than I would talk to a female superior. So I don't feel like there was ever any reason for anyone to think that I was getting anywhere for being a female. Like, in the end, everyone knew why.
Do you feel like, from your experience, everything was equal in terms of gender or race or religion?
Yeah. like from the top, like at the top, like you have all sorts of different people. Like you have female admirals and you have, you know, like black admirals and you have fucking black female admirals, like Admiral Howard. She's a bad bitch, and, you know. So like I feel like you have people from all walks of life and they're at the top and they're at the bottom. And you're just mixed in and there's nothing like there's no way to like act like that. There's no room to be, you know, racist or sexist or anything like that, because someone's gonna call you out on your shit if you're acting like that.
How did the Navy encourage morale or unit cohesion?
I mean, they tried. They have, like, MWR, Morale, Welfare, Recreation. They have, like, facilities. Like, the libraries, like, video games, like, shit like that.
What are the facilities?
Where you can go and play pool, watch TV. Yeah. Sometimes, like, when I was in Maryland, everyone really wanted to watch the fights, the UFC fights, so they would try to screen those, but sometimes just wouldn't, and everyone would be pissed off. It wasn't, like, the best, I'll say that. I feel like a lot of times they had trouble maintaining morale. But, I mean, I feel like they kind of tried. It's kind of up to you.
Did you go to any other bases besides the one in Maryland?
I mean, the one in Mississippi. That one had a bar.
When did you go to that one?
That was my LS school.
Oh, okay.
Logistics specialist school. The bar was, like, cool because it's really cheap. And there's a bar, and it's right next to your barracks. My other one didn't have a bar. Which I felt like the bar made, like, you know, helped you connect with people. Whereas in Maryland, it was, like, really hard to connect with people. Plus, there wasn't that many people living in the barracks to begin with. So, it was rough there. And then the one in Monterey, that was an army base, though. So, it was a little different.
Was the army base better or worse?
They had a way better, like, facility for, you know, morale, I guess. I guess I'm just saying it's better because they served alcohol there. They had movie theaters in there. They would have, like dances, I guess, but it's not like anyone really danced there. It was kind of nerdy, but, they had pool tables and computers in there, which is more, I feel like, than the other ones that I've seen.
How long total were you in the Navy?
4 years.
Why didn't you decide to reenlist?
I was just tired of the bullshit, and I felt like if I got a degree, I could go further in life, and, like, I felt like I could, if I did get a degree, I could come back as an officer if I wanted to, but in general, just, you know, have a better job.
What was it like leaving the Navy?
Shitty. Everyone was mad at me. I got a lot of shit. Like, the captain, he wasn't our CO, and he was the CO of something, Supply Naval District, Washington, I think. So he was kind of connected to us in some way, but he scheduled a meeting with me upon hearing that I was getting out. So, like, which is fine. It's not typical, but I understand, like, that he took an interest in me and my career, which it can be typical, but he scheduled this meeting with me, and then, my supply officer made me go into a meeting with her and my divisional officer to, screen his questions, which I didn't realize what they were doing at first, but after, I was really pissed about that, because they made sure I wasn't going to say anything wrong to him. So then when I was in the meeting with him, I made sure that I was kind of straightforward, and he asked me, you know, like, what would you do to stay in? What would we have to do to make you stay in? I was like, I want a bonus. And he wasn't really about that. So,
Would you have stayed in if they had offered you a bonus?
Yeah, probably. Like, that's a great incentive. Money is a fucking great incentive. But afterward, I don't really remember what I said, to be honest. Like, it was kind of a blur, but I remember coming out of the meeting and then my like senior most enlisted person was like, oh, I heard you were kind of rude to the captain. And I was like, yeah. I mean, not rude, but I said exactly what I was blunt. I'll say that, which, you know, isn't always looked at as, like, cool to be like that way. If that makes sense.
What was your transition like from Navy life to civilian life?
Weird. I don't have to do shit anywhere. I have to be anywhere.
Was it difficult?
Kind of. It wasn't difficult until I got to school. And then everything was, like, weird, and I just wished I was back.
Why did you choose to come to Oregon?
Like, kind of just for the fuck of it. To be honest, like, wanted to go somewhere new. I've never been to Oregon. I don't know. I was told that going to a large school with a big athletic program would be beneficial to me. Like, because of big athletic programs get a lot of money to go towards academics, which I think is, I don't really agree with at this point, but that was, like, my basis. Like, I knew it was a big athletic school. And I got accepted here. Their applications aren't due until later, way later than other people's application, other schools. So.
Why would you say that the transition was weird? What was weird about it?
Just having to do so much and keep up with so much and then just going from, like, 100 to 0.
What does that mean?
Like, not, like, having to do everything and then having to do nothing.
So you felt like your time wasn't useful or that you weren't
being
useful?
Yeah, no, being in school especially makes me feel like I'm not doing anything for anybody and I'm not fulfilled. Like, I don't know what the word is.
So it was shocking to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you describe the cultural difference between the Navy to not just civilian life, but also university life?
A bunch of little shits everywhere, crying, being little bitches.
How so?
Just no one being self-sufficient, but acting like they're self-sufficient is, I don't know, I just find
so
it
not
very,
very not very dependent, or not very independent.
Yeah, I find it very hard to relate to people around here. Just, like I said, babies. They're babies.
Is it more difficult to find friends in the university than it was in the Navy?
Yeah, like, so much more difficult. Because you can't just relate to everybody. You don't have that one thing in common. Like, you would think that you have school in common. Like, oh, we go to the same school, but no, that's not true.
What are you studying?
Art now.
What do you mean now?
Well, I was studying linguistics, which fucking sucks.
Do you feel like there's some kind of reflection in how you went to the Defense Language Institute and ended up not doing that, and then came to college to study linguistics and then ended up not doing that? Do you feel like at the end of the day maybe there's something that mirrors what happened? Like, maybe you're not as interested in linguistics as you thought?
I has a lot to do with interest and me, like, having no interest whatsoever. I think I do have an interest to learn new languages, but I don't think I need to know how it works. I don't think I need to know the inner workings, because they're super boring and not that cool, as it turns out.
Now that you're farther away from your parents, are they more upset that you're here than they were when you went to the Navy, or are they happier?
We don't really talk about that anymore. They don't. It's like, once that was, like, my initial, like, my real initial, like, break off from them, and since then, it's whatever.
Okay. Do you have anything else you'd like to add to this interview, or anything about the Navy or Navy culture?
No.
Okay. Well, it was nice talking to you.
Fantastic.